Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servo-Didio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Please check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. You can also send us an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com and check out my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, on Amazon, or you can also check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/findingyourpeacewithinthechaos. Well, tonight I have such an incredible show, so educational. With us I have Pamela S.K. Glassner. She's an author, a producer, and a filmmaker, and we will be discussing her film, Last Will and Embezzlement, with a discussion guide, Silver and Gold. Why I really wanted her to be on the show tonight, because I think it's so important for us to protect our elderly. Unfortunately, they are being exploited on a daily basis, and we have noticed so much on the news lately with all these different phone scams and money scams and IRS scams that have really been targeting the elderly. And it's really a population that needs to be protected. And I just could not wait to have Pamela on. Pamela, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
This is so important because we see so much more on the news about how all these scams are coming apart, coming on the news, coming on with phone calls. But you actually really cover a scam that's going on that I don't think is really spoken about too much because of the shame, the stigma, and really not a lot of people knowing about it. How did you get started with all of this?
Well, Last Will and Embezzlement was born because that's the name of the film. That's also the name of my website because my elderly parents were actually exploited by a man who insinuated himself into their lives without my brother and I having any idea of what was going on. The perpetrator met them at their synagogue, which is a perfect hunting ground. Churches and synagogues are perfect hunting grounds for victims because, generally speaking, if somebody at your church or synagogue approaches you and smiles at you and shakes your hand, you expect them to be a trustworthy person. So he knew them from there, and then my dad, who had Alzheimer's, eventually had to go into a nursing home. And as soon as my dad stopped going to synagogue on a regular basis, this man knew about it because he saw my parents every single week, and that's pretty much when he went in for the kill. I live up in Connecticut. My parents lived in Florida at the time, in Central Florida. My brother lives in Florida, but the other end of the state. And so there was really nobody there with eyes on the situation. And he just kind of took over their lives, their financial lives, slowly but surely, and eventually siphoned out a few hundred thousand dollars so that when my mom and dad passed away, they were poor. They were just, you know, they had nothing left. He had taken everything. So, and you know, for me, as the victim's daughter, it was about the money because it was for my dad. My mom passed away first, and then my dad needed the money to live on. So, yes, I was concerned about the money. But more than just being concerned about the money, my dad needed it to survive. And when towards the very end of his life, he became very, very ill. He had Alzheimer's. He had a laundry list of other ailments. He needed to be in a very particular kind of facility that could deal with everything that he had, that was also a locked facility to keep the perpetrator away from him. And because the crime had not been investigated by the police, which is more often the case than not, we could not prove that my dad and mom had not given the money away voluntarily. And so Medicare would not provide any funding for my dad to go into the hospital. And so my brother and I just had to sit back and watch our dad die. It was beyond, I mean, there are no words to describe how horrible it was. And I just decided that I did not want other people to be victims like that. There are lots and lots of victims. There are victims to the tune of 30-something billion dollars a year. So I just took it upon myself to be one of the people to end this scourge.
I mean, terrific. I mean, you see, you know, sometimes the most obvious ones where we get these phone calls and the elderly have been taken advantage with, you know, by their grandchild is stuck somewhere or somebody needs their money or it's Social Security, and they're getting phone calls and they're being taken advantage of. Who would know to think not to trust the person in the synagogue, the person in the church, because other people know them? I mean, this shows how calculating, manipulative, and premeditated these perpetrators are to be able to really go into these settings. I mean, they're predators. They're just like, you know, child molesters are predators. These people are predators because they know how to attack and groom and go after the weak, the ones that are a little more, maybe more trusting. And also, if you're having some cognitive dysfunction, it's the perfect victim to take advantage of. And I think it's so frightening because by the time I think anyone really figures out what's going on, the money is taken, the documentation is signed, how do you fight it? And they know, these perpetrators, I guess, know the laws, know the loopholes, how an innocent elderly person wouldn't be able to have a leg to stand on because they don't even know how to defend themselves in something like this.
Well, exactly. So you've actually touched on two very important things. One is for the cognitively impaired person. In the state of Florida, unless you go for what's called conservatorship or guardianship, which means taking away this person's rights, basically declaring them incompetent, as a daughter, unless I was willing to do that, then I really couldn't protect my dad. And so that's part of it. And aside from the astronomical cost that gets involved in it, it's not easy. I mean, when you really sit down to think of it, my dad was my hero all my life. And for me to suddenly have to go to a court and say that this man who graduated third in his class from Columbia University was all of a sudden incompetent was, I couldn't make myself do something that degrading to him. And he had no idea what was going on, you know, so that's part of it. The other part of it is that when you have an elderly person who is competent but is lonely, that was the case of my mom. When my dad went into the nursing home, my mom, who was 89, for the first time in her life, she was alone because she grew up in an era where women went from their father's house to their husband's house. And there was no such thing as, well, I mean, I'm sure that there were women who went out and lived on their own, but that was uncommon, at least, you know, from my parents' point of view, from the culture that they grew up in. So all of a sudden, my mom was head of household, had to pay all of the bills, had to, you know, literally take the time to write out the checks, figure out what was going on, do all of the things that my dad used to take care of, and visit dad and watch him mentally deteriorate. It was just outrageously stressful for her. I wasn't there. My brother wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, this man who had charming down to a science swoops in and says, let me take care of everything. If your children really cared about you, they would be down here doing this for you or with you. I mean, all of this, of course, is in retrospect. We had no idea that this man even existed until everything was gone and it was way too late. But this is what he did. He ended up being on her checking account. He ended up being the executor of her will. He got her to write a new will. Her signature on the will was not even her signature. I mean, I saw the will afterwards There was a copy of it at Town Hall, and I eventually got a copy of the will, and the signature on it didn't look anything like her signature. I mean, I have copies of her signature all the time because I grew up with her, so I know what it looks like. And I had copies of it from documents that she had signed, you know, over the years. But in Florida, unless you're willing to pay an attorney to represent you in probate court, and the attorneys want a fortune for something like this because it happens so much. I mean, they make a fortune on this kind of thing. There was nothing I could do. There was absolutely nothing I could do.
No. And I think then the victim, the elderly person, is left trying to figure out, how did this all happen? Is this real? Did this happen? And also, like anyone, you're in disbelief when you really trust someone. So it's so
mm-hmm.
many layers of betrayal that are going on that someone at a younger age in the prime of their life would have a hard time dealing with this, fighting in courts, proving things. Imagine an older person alone who has either lost their significant other or that significant other is in a nursing home, you know, going through, you know, the last stages of life. To have to take advantage of someone in that position is so horrible. I mean, is there anything people can do beforehand to prepare or to prevent this from happening?
There are attorneys, elder law attorneys, and I always say that when I travel around the country and I speak on this topic, and I always tell people that you should get together with an elder law attorney specifically. Not just any old attorney, because, I mean, pretty much any old attorney can draw up a will. But a lot of times wills can be challenged rewritten when somebody is not even aware of what's going on. Elder law attorneys are used to all of the ins and outs, all the tricks. They know what the perpetrators can do. They're very easy to find. There's an organization called NALA, National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, and it's NAELA.org. You can just go on their website and you can find an attorney in your area, and they will help you set up wills and trusts and all of the things that need to be set up so that at the end of your life, when you need it the most, your money will not disappear. Because, as I said, because Medicare would not take care of my dad's expenses, my brother and I just sat there and watched. We just sat there and watched our dad die. And if he had had the money, he would have been able to go into this particular place, which was only a mile and a half away from the nursing home he was staying in. And, I mean, who knows how much longer he would have lived. But he would have lived longer than the few weeks that it took him to pass away. So, you know, I mean, it's just, so you have to do that. You have to get together with, if you think there's something going on, if you call your local, if you call your town hall, or if you call a local nursing home or senior center, they'll be able to set you up with an agency called Area Agency on Aging. And they would be able to help you with, you know, kind of guide you through all the different processes that you have, that you will need. I always tell seniors when I do these presentations, get together with a friend of yours and become a buddy, maybe even a group of friends, you know, three or four or five of you. And anytime anybody asks you for money, anytime anyone asks you, let's go to your bank and withdraw some money, or let me go on your checking account, anytime anybody asks you to sign something important, check with your buddies. Even that step of checking with your buddies could be enough so that one of them can say, hey, you know what, this looks suspicious. Let's call somebody who really knows about these things. The whole idea is to keep people from being isolated, because isolation and loneliness and fear are the things that end up allowing people to make decisions that they otherwise would not. Does
absolutely.
That make sense?
And I would think, yes, and I would absolutely say, you know, these predators, these perpetrators, I would hope that they would be charged with not just fraud and embezzlement, and also a hate crime, because they're targeting a certain group, but also something to deal something as being a part of the death of this person, especially, I guess, in the case of your father, if, you know, they were, he could not go to the specific nursing home or facility because they didn't have the money to pay for it, I would hope he would be charged in this. I mean, will there be charges? I mean, can you bring charges where anything like that can happen, or is this just so impossible to prove?
It really depends on where you are. Technically, yes, you should be able to, but if you have a police department that has not been educated as far as this particular issue is concerned, generally speaking, their knee-jerk reaction is call a lawyer, and they don't want to get involved in it. There is also a thing called prosecutorial thresholds. That is something that is really across the country, and some places pay more attention to it than others. Basically, what that means is every single case that any municipality prosecutes, there's an expense involved, right? I mean, they have to pay the prosecutor, they have to pay the marshals or whatever to serve papers on somebody. I mean, there's an expense involved in prosecuting any case. And at the end of that prosecution, depending on the size of the crime, meaning dollar amount, the fine is really dependent upon the size of that crime. So if they prosecute someone for stealing $6 million, that penalty, assuming that they do get a conviction, is higher than if they prosecute someone for stealing $100,000. I mean, that makes perfect sense. Well, the problem comes in when they're each municipality, everybody in the country right now. I mean, there's just, money is tight. And so municipalities have to triage the cases. They have to make decisions based on, if we do this case here, we could get a bigger fine, more money into our banks than if we do that case over there. So they have to triage them and make decisions. And some communities, actually a lot of communities, will just make decisions that any case involving a dollar amount under X amount of dollars, we just can't prosecute. Just tell them to go see a lawyer. And unfortunately, my parents, even though it was six figures, they weren't interested. So, you know, I mean, in the area where my parents were, pretty much if it's under $1 million, they were not interested. So that's what happened. They just never bothered to do anything.
Yes, and I think this word really has to get out, because I was thinking, you know, listening to you, maybe they won't prosecute or they won't do this. There's other ways, hopefully, that families, elderly victims of this can maybe spread the word, go to their local news, you know, have different discussions. Because I definitely, you were just recently on my television show, The Alexa Show, and I actually got such great feedback and so many questions about this topic that I sent our episode to one of our local news channels, Channel 12 News here in Westchester, New York, hoping that they're going to do a piece on this, because I think you really need to educate people, and I think all areas of people, and the workbook, discussion book that you have with Last Will and Embezzlement is so important about, you know, profile of the most vulnerable, all the different things people to look for, and just have people discuss this. You know, is it a secure facility? How safe is your money? Checking your gut feelings. I mean, I think these are all important things that when you're in a discussion group, it's opening up that dialogue, which I find it's so important. And I know we had discussed something, the Medicare 5-year look back. What is that? Because that's very interesting.
Okay, well, the Medicare 5-year look back is Medicare has a rule that people you know, when people want to go on what they call, I guess, I think it's called Title 19. But the rule is that if you want to go on Medicare, actually I think Title 19 is Medicaid, but if you want to go on Medicare, okay, after you're 65 or, you know, when, once you're ready to go into a nursing home and you want Medicare to pay for that nursing home, or if you need to go into the hospital and you need Medicare to pay for those bills, which, you know, can be astronomical, Medicare's rule is you have to spend down your own money first. Okay, so if you have $100,000 in the bank, or if you have $10,000 in the bank, or if you have $6 million in the bank, before you can start getting supported, you know, paid, have your medical expenses paid by Medicare, okay, your money has to be spent first. But they want to make sure that you didn't give it away in advance of that, because some people will try to give the money away, you know, like give it to their family, give it to their kids, you know, maybe give it to, even give it to charity, just so that it doesn't get eaten up by their medical bills. And so Medicare says, well, if you gave it away 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago, that's fine. But if you gave it away recently because you thought that there was a chance that you might have to spend it for your own medical expenses, that's not okay with us. And so then what they do is they limit, they postpone the payments that they're going to send to you. They, you know, based on how much money you gave away, they will postpone their payments for your medical care. And because the police refused to investigate when my parents' money was stolen, my dad, who needed that money, couldn't get it because we could not prove to Medicare that my dad hadn't given it away voluntarily. And so they said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. And your dad is what we call, your dad, because there's no money, he's what we call indigent. And so he's just going to have to go on welfare. And so welfare would pay for the facility. But then they said the particular kind of facility that your dad needs, we'll only let your dad go to one of three. My parents were in Orlando. The first one that they offered to me was in Cleveland, Ohio. I mean, you know, what good is Cleveland, Ohio? The second one they offered to me was in Miami. The third one that they offered was in northern Florida, which was closer, but it was still a 300-mile trip. In any case, I mean, we put my dad in the ambulance. That's the only way that he could travel, was by ambulance at that point, and he just did not survive the trip. So, you know, and it's all because the money was taken and we couldn't prove it. And one of the problems in that is what you actually alluded to before. When you have somebody who's older, I mean, my mom let him, you know, he coerced her into letting him into their financial lives. Now, in some states, they're really aggressive about prosecuting those kinds of things, but in other states, there are so many elderly people because, you know, states like Florida, where so many people went to retire there. So many people of my parents' generation, they moved to warmer climates, and then they aged in place, and it became a fabulous hunting ground for victims. And then the police departments are just overwhelmed with how many cases there are, so they just had to say, we're only going to prosecute cases over a certain dollar amount because we just don't have the resources to prosecute every single one.
Which is so frightening. And probably, you know, when you think back in generations of different age groups and different time periods, people don't discuss their personal issues. You know, I think our younger generations now are more into social media and calling attention to them, you know, to the different social injustices. But, you know, you think back to your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your parents, they would never discuss finances openly. They would never discuss feeling that someone may have betrayed them. It's just that's your personal business, and you don't air your laundry out and get other people involved. So it's almost like they're the perfect victim for these perpetrators, and that is so premeditated. How can someone watch your film or get your discussion book or have you come speak? Because I really feel this is so important to get the word out.
Well, if they go to, if anybody wants me to come speak, or if anybody wants to see the film, or to get the book. Book is called Silver and Gold. Film is Last Will and Embezzlement. If they will just go to lastwillandembezzlement.com, then and I also have a Facebook page of the same. It would be Facebook and then Last Will and Embezzlement, you know, however Facebook makes its addresses. And then I believe there's also a Twitter page for Last Will and Embezzlement. Basically, it's all going to lead people back to the lastwillandembezzlement.com website, and then they can reach me through the contact page. And actually, I'm running a contest right now on the contact page, so it looks a little strange for somebody who's going to try and get to me. But if they just put their name in there and put a little comment in there, please, you know, connect with me, and then their email address. I keep everything private. I don't share anybody's information with anybody. I'll get back to them, and you know, I can make an arrangement to come out and speak to their group or whatever.
Incredible. And, you know, and I just want to let people know, because I know so many times there's tough topics, tough discussions to have, and my show is basically based on that. That's what I say. Let's bring up these tough topics and discussions. And I know there's a lot of stigma and shame around certain things. But I just want to let people know, in your film, you have actor Mickey Rooney. I mean, he's an icon. He's a legend. He's just an amazing person, talking about his story of being taken advantage of. So I want, you know, like most victims blame themselves. This is not something you've done. This is not something that you have to deal with. This is a crime. And this is abuse if people are doing this to you. And I think it's so important to shed light on that. You don't have to go through this alone. There's people there to help you.
Exactly, exactly. And Mickey Rooney even says in the film, if it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. And it's true. Unfortunately, Mickey was horribly abused, and I mean, fortunately, then Disney stepped in. They saw that something was going on, and they stepped in and they got his abusers out of his household, and then protected him for the rest of his life. Unfortunately, there was still some. Everything was gone. Unfortunately, Mickey died poor, just like my dad. But at least towards the end, he was being cared for properly. He was being looked out for. He wasn't being physically assaulted anymore. His taxes were being paid. He had a full refrigerator. I mean, food was being withheld from him while this was going on. So, you know, there was at least towards the end of his life, he was being treated with decency and respect. So, and you're right. It does help for people to look at the film and see somebody from their era telling them that you know, it's not their fault and that they can get help.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I think it's so incredible, the work that you do, and definitely I'll keep promoting your book and your film. And please, if anyone has any questions, please contact Pamela, or you can contact myself at insightintohealing@gmail.com. Again, everything is confidential. Names will not be shared. But I think it's really important, if you have any questions or think you might be a victim of this sort of crime, please reach out and know that you're not alone. And Pamela, again, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It was truly incredible.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really do appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. And everyone, again, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for all your support. And please send any questions, show ideas, or if you'd like to be a guest, to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Everyone, have a good night, and God bless.